this topic yesterday, so I looked at it and yeah, something came to my mind that I've been thinking about. So I'll read a few paragraphs, and it connects what's being talked about here. So I'll try to share that with you, and then maybe I'll open it up and see what thoughts you may have. Okay, so we'll read Attitudes in Devotional Service. I'll read the first paragraph, and maybe someone can take one from there. Attitudes in Devotional Service. One of the most important statements about Krishna consciousness is in Srila Prabhupada's preface to the Nectar of Instruction. Advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. Srila Prabhupada has stated that anyone can become a pure devotee of Krishna immediately if he simply desires to. Advancement in devotional service means to purify our desires, and pure devotional service means to be fully absorbed in serving Krishna without even the subtlest desire for any personal sense gratification. Maybe someone can read on.
Only the most fortunate people can come to Krishna consciousness. People come to devotional service for a variety of reasons. Some are seeking shelter from intense stress. Others are looking for a simple alternative lifestyle. Some come out of curiosity to see what it's all about. Some because they want a cleaner, better life for themselves and their families. Some are directly searching for God and the meaning of life. Should I carry on?
Yeah.
Of course, real devotional service is completely unmotivated, even by desires for peace and holistic well-being. Only such a surrendered attitude can bring complete satisfaction to the self. Those who are most intelligent from the beginning of the practice of Krishna consciousness sincerely endeavor to be pure devotees of Krishna. Such an attitude is always to be encouraged, for it is the essence of our movement. Others, however, may consider such an outlook to be utopian. However, how is it possible? They will postulate, for those coming from such sinful backgrounds, to consider seriously the prospect of becoming pure devotees, completely free from all material desires. Better be realistic, they say, make some compromise with Maya and continue at some level of Krishna consciousness. Of course, everyone is encouraged to begin devotional service at whatever level it finds convenient. And it is not expected that all will take to it is fully from the very beginning. Indeed, the whole system of Vanashram Dharma, which forms the base of Vedic culture, is meant for the gradual elevation of materially contaminated persons who are willing to adopt some measure of Krishna consciousness into their lives but are not yet prepared for full surrender to Krishna.
Okay, great. Alright, so let's see what we got with this. So, in this opening paragraph, Maharaj is making a point of how there's an ideal in Krishna consciousness. The ideal is outlined by the Bhagavata. Sarve pumsham paro dharmo. The highest dharma is that by which you can attain love for Krishna. And what is the nature of that love, or what is the characteristic? Ahaituki is completely unmotivated, apratihata, and it never stops. Yeah. So this is the standard, the ideal of the spiritual goal that we're trying to reach. And then he's explaining that there's a reality of where we are here in the material world with so many desires. Some days you wake up in the morning, I don't know, you want a Kit Kat or something. Once I said that in a class, actually, I said, yeah, just some days you feel like just waking up and you want a Kit Kat. And then the next week, 10 people bought me Kit Kats. Another time I was explaining this point in a class, I said, we never put effort into the parts of our devotional life that people don't see. Right? So then I said, just like my socks. And then I lifted my socks and there was holes in the bottom of the socks. Just like my socks. Next week I've got 20 pairs of new socks. Okay, so as a preacher, you want to get things, you just put subtle messages in.
Is that true?
Yeah. So there's a gap. There's a gap between the ideal and the real. Which one do we focus on? The ideal or the real? What do you think, Rich? What should we be focusing on in Krishna consciousness?
Ideal.
Okay. Pada, what do you think? Ideal or real? Where should we put our energy?
See the ideal, but know where you're at the minute. How to get to the ideal.
Yeah, similar. Halfway. Exactly halfway.
Halfway?
Yeah, in between. In the gap.
I think you got the point. Basically, you need to be aware of the ideal. You need to always have that as your North Star. Sachinanda Maharaj always used to say to me, know what your North Star is, what you're aiming for, but also be very aware where you are. Because it's like the Satnam example, right? You have to put in where you are and where you want to go, and then it makes sense, right? So Maharaj is making the point here that there's sometimes people think that if you only focus on the ideal, or there are people who focus on the ideal, that's utopian, isn't it? PDS. Pure Devotee Syndrome. Right? They say if you're someone who only focuses on the ideal. And if you focus on the real, it's like, okay, yeah, we've got so many material desires. You may not make the progress to the ideal. You need to have both. And that's the attitude of perfection. Now, when I was reading this, I thought, this is amazing, because what happens in Krishna consciousness is that we're supposed to have attitudes towards devotional life that sometimes seem very opposite. Isn't it? It sometimes seems like an opposite to be meditating on the ideal and also to be focused on the real. It seems like there's a disconnect there. Right? But the ideal attitude is to be aware of both. Right? There's multiple attitudes. Okay? I got this realization also one week before Janaki Prabhu left. I was having a conversation with him, and it was interesting because we were doing all these calls. And on these calls, Zoom calls, you know, people were giving their final message to him. You know, that people were crying on the call, you know, like, oh, Janaki Nath, and you know, this. And they were just like, okay, this is it. We're never going to speak to you again. And then in the evening after that call, we'd be sitting with Karuna Ras, and we'd be like making a whole plan as to how he's going to get better and what the next treatment was. So one evening I said to him, I said, JD, isn't this confusing for you? On one hand, you're a dying person and you're supposed to be meditating on the fact that your moment is coming. And on the other hand, you're having all these conversations about trying to turn your health around and stay positive mindset that you're going to live for longer. So I said to him, you know what, why don't we just shut one of them down? Either we stop having these calls and all of these people, you know, putting into your mind that you're leaving, and we just focus on getting better. Or we just say no more treatment, forget it. Now just admit, accept that you're a dying man and just focus on death. How can you do both? It's confusing. And you know what he said to me? He said, 4 years ago, from the day I was diagnosed with cancer, Krishna taught me to live with two meditations. Be ready for death and simultaneously fight to the end. Right? And in my mind, like having both of those meditations together, I was putting myself in his position, and I honestly felt if I was in his position, I would just tell all the doctors, forget it, don't visit me anymore, just leave it. Now I'm just focusing on death. But here was a personality who was able to live with two attitudes which seemingly were opposite, in conflict almost, or in contradiction, but he was able to live with both. He said, it's not a problem for me. And that's what he did till the end. He fought, but he was ready whenever the moment came. So this was playing a lot in my mind over the last 1-2 weeks, how the perfect attitude in devotional life means that there's many conflicting aspects that we have to incorporate together. And today I'm going to show you some of the attitudes that have to come together. And the danger of only having one of the two attitudes. Yeah, so I'm going to explain what I mean. So there's many examples of it. Just like Vidyananda Maharaj was talking about Madhudrisa Prabhu. I don't know how many of you know Madhudrisa. He was like sannyasi in Australia. Prabhupada called him the emperor of kirtan. And he's just played one beat of it. Just used to play one beat. And Prabhupada called him the emperor of kirtan. And he was like, you know, he was also like an emperor. He was heavy. And one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture in some hall in Australia, and then some person just stood up and said, rah, 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 like criticizing Prabhupada or criticizing the philosophy, something. So without even asking Prabhupada, Madhudrisa just took the mic from in front of Prabhupada, and he just stood up in front of the whole hall, and he said, "We are here to discuss philosophy. So if you want to discuss philosophy, then be respectful, be a gentleman, speak with some etiquette, and inquire with submission." And then he paused and he said, "And if you don't want to do that, then me and you can go outside and we can deal with it in a different way." It was quite interesting. It was a very interesting story, because I thought, like, that's the attitude of a devotee. He's like very respectful, very calm, very composed, but if need be, can be like a lion, right? When it's required. Can be like a lamb at home and a lion on the chase. Seemingly contradictory, but coming together. Right? Now, so what I'm going to show you now is how the perfect attitude, because it's all about attitude. It's all about attitude. Basically here, we're all doing the same activities. Unless here someone is doing something totally out of the ordinary, we're all doing the same activities which are going to give us advancement. Why is it that we're all advancing at different rates? It's only attitude. So we have to get the attitude right. So I've already given you one example. Be ready to die. But have a plan to live long term in Krishna consciousness, right? You've got to live with both of those meditations, yeah? Here's another attitude you have to balance. You have to be enthusiastic and greedy to advance in spiritual life. But at the same time, you have to be patient and consistent. Okay? Related to that, you could say another one is you have to be intense. You have to be intense. Yeah? Bhagavatam says, Divrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Padam. Even if you have so many desires, you can overcome it by intense devotional service. But at the same time, you've got to be balanced. The tendency is the attitude of devotional service goes to one or the other. If you're too much thinking you're going to live forever, you may not develop the urgency that I've got to do it now, I've got to become a pure devotee now. If you're so so much here, intense, ready to die tomorrow, I've got to be intense. But you don't die tomorrow. You live for weeks, you live for months, you live for years. You may not be able to sustain it. And then you'll crash. Sometimes people are diagnosed with cancer. And they tell them 3 months, they end up living for 3 years. So you may think, okay, I've got cancer, 3 months, I'm going to die. So you've got to be ready for death. But at the same time, you've got to be prepared that you might live longer. Here's another one. we want to be engaged according to our nature. Right? We hear so much about that in Krishna consciousness, isn't it? That we got to be engaged according to our psychophysical nature. We got to find a service that fits with our dharma. We got to do something that's inspiring, that, you know, challenges me to grow. But at the same time, you got to be flexible to the needs of the day. Ready to do anything. Somehow, you got to balance both attitudes. Because some people think devotional service is just about this. This is me, this is who I am, this is what I need in devotional service. If I don't get this kind of service, I'm not inspired. Then you go off the wall. It's the wrong attitude. An attitude that will not bring you advancement in spiritual life. And some people just think, no, I just got to be flexible, open to the needs of the Vaishnavas, forget about who I am, forget about what I need. And that's it's a good sentiment, but it's not sustainable. So where is that person who's able to balance such things? This is the attitude that's going to bring you significant advancement in spiritual life. Here's another one. We got to be focused on giving to others. If you just live a miserly spiritual life, oh, it's about me, it's about my problems, it's about my desires, it's about my ambitions, it's about my future. If it's all me, you miss the whole point of spiritual life, which is about selflessness. Spiritual life means a selfless life. However, you got to also invest in yourself. Where is the person who's able to balance both attitudes? Again, if you become so much into this side, or you become so much into this side, you go off the wall. Sometimes people give so much, and then they get fried out, they get bitter. They feel like, I gave so much to the movement, but what did anyone do for me? Here's another one. You've got to be strict on rules and regulations. Right? But at the same time, you've got to be ready to adjust to the essence. Sometimes people are so into the rules and regulations. We know this. Nectar of Instruction says, Niyamagraha and Niyamagraha. Both are unfavorable for devotional service. Both are unfavorable attitudes. Somehow or other, we need to learn how to be strict and also embody the essence. This is the attitude that is going to bring perfection. Here's another one. You've got to be childlike and innocent. Saralata e Vaishnavata, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. Vaishnavism means simplicity. If you're not simple, if you're not innocent, if you're not free from duplicity, you're not practicing Vaishnavism. You've missed the essence. At the same time, you've got to be mature and streetwise. Sometimes people are more focused on this. Oh, mature, streetwise. I know how ISKCON works. I know how the ashram works. I know how temples work. You know, I know how to take care of myself in ISKCON. And they become so focused on being, streetwise in how they navigate themselves in the movement that they lose their childlike and innocence. Sometimes it's funny how we relate to ISKCON. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the holy dham is like a deep ocean which is covered by a thin layer of oil. And if you're superficial, then you'll just think that's an ocean of oil when you see the dham. You won't be able to go beyond that surface and see what's deep. So some people, I often think ISKCON is like a deep ocean which is covered by a thin layer of oil. And you can just look at ISKCON and deal with it in a mature and streetwise way, managerial, see what's going on the surface, all the politics, but never really go beyond that and understand how what deep things are available there. That is only available to one who's childlike and innocent and able to go beyond the externals. Here's another one. We've got to be striving to expand our influence and service. What did Prabhupada say? My disease is that I always think
big.
Prabhupada was trying to do something big, trying to make a change to the world, trying to make a contribution. He was never thinking small. He was always thinking about expanding results. And at the same time, as a Vaishnava, what are we trying to do? We're striving to become humble and insignificant. Who's able to balance both things? Who's investing in both things? Who's attentive to both things? That person who's able to balance both things, they meet with success. Here's another one. We've got to feel ourselves to be entirely dependent on Vaishnavas. Isn't it? What does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? Eka ki amar, nahi paya bal. Harinam sankirtane. Ekaki amal, me by myself, nahi paya bal, I have no strength. Harinam sankirtane, to do the Harinam of the Holy Name. I have no strength by myself. I need the Vaishnavas. But what's the other aspect? You got to fly your own plane. Who's able to balance both attitudes? Some people are more focused here. No, I need the Vaishnavas. Without the Vaishnavas, I'm nothing. I can't. I need everyone around me. As soon as devotees go, I fall apart. No. At the same time, if someone thinks, oh, they come and go, all these devotees, oh, I'm focused, I'm going to do it by myself, that's also not good. Is it now you understand why is so difficult advancement in spiritual life? Activities of spiritual life are not difficult. That's the easy bit. Waking up for Mangal Arati is the easy bit. The easy bit. That's the easy bit. The difficult bit. Who's able to balance these attitudes? What generally happens is that you can find Shastric evidence for this side, and you can also find Shastric evidence for this side, and you, each one of us, can go through this list, and most of us will be lopsided. And you know what? We'll justify it by Shastra. We'll justify it by Shastra. Or, either we're lopsided on one or the other, or, the other thing that happens to devotees is that they do a boga tyag. They do a pendulum. So they go here, and then they realize, no, I got to do the other side. And then they go to the other extreme. And then they go back. This way. These kind of things will bring you stability. They'll allow you to maybe stay in the movement. But the goal of life is not to stay in the movement. I stayed in ISKCON for 30 years. You can give someone a medal for that. I mean, that's quite an achievement for sure. But that's not the goal of life. The goal of life is not to stay in the movement. What's the point of being in the movement for 30 years if you're still dry? If you're still a cynic? If you still have no taste? If you have no love for the Vaishnavas? If you're still so hard-hearted that no emotional transformation takes place when you engage in spiritual practice? If you look around and you can't be enthusiastic and happy to see other people advance? If you can't be enthused when you hear the glory of ISKCON spreading? What's the point of being such a dry devotee?
It's worse if you don't stay.
Yeah, it's worse if you don't stay.
You stay.
Therefore, Vishwambhaprabhu used to say, Vishwambhaprabhu said on Sankirtan, can you give a donation? Can you give a donation? Because something is better than nothing. All is better than something. Something is better than nothing. But staying in the Krishna consciousness movement won't get you out of the material world. If you strive in the Krishna consciousness movement, you'll get out of the material world. Do we want to remain cynics, dry our whole life, or do we want to start changing our attitude? If you do this, you may be a shooting star. The cynics will criticize you. Oh, you're just a pure devotee syndrome. You're going to come. And they might be right, actually. Somehow or other, this is the balance you need to strike. Yeah, you look at every great devotee. They're able to strike this balance. They're able to do both. Every great devotee. And that's what we have to do. That's the attitude of perfection. And so, as I was reading it, this is what occurred to me, that we have such a great opportunity, but we have to get the attitude right. And it's all about attitude, you know? I love that story Prabhupada says about two people that came in for the job. And one had all the right qualifications. And then he walked out of the door, but he left the door open. And then the second guy came in and he didn't have any of the qualifications. But he respectfully left and quietly shut the door. And the boss said, I'll take the second guy. The first guy may have all the abilities. The first guy may have all the competence. The first guy may have all the credentials, but the second person has attitude. The second person has character. The second person has the proper mindset and disposition by which they can learn, by which they can change, by which they can improve, and by which they can grow. That's more important. But most people don't have the attitude or the mindset by which they can grow and improve. That's why they stay in the Krishna consciousness movement for so long, but they don't change. And it's painful to see. It's so painful to see that someone does all the activities of devotional life, but because they don't have the right attitude, they don't grow. Because what did Prabhupada say here? Advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent on the attitude of the follower. This is the biggest meditation someone has to have in their life. And the biggest downfall, the biggest nail in the coffin, is when you look at your own life and you say, I can't change my attitude. Then you've nailed the coffin in your own spiritual life. So this is what we have to think about, how to balance both things. We have to live with both meditations in mind, and this perfect attitude will then lead to a significant advancement in spiritual life. So, of course, I'm a very judgmental person, so maybe some of my judgments are right and most of them are wrong, but I can think of so many individuals, and myself included, who became stagnant in spiritual life because they were not able to balance both sides of these attitudes. Because they went to one extreme or the other. And it's sad to see. And at the same time, you can see very simple-minded devotees who maybe didn't have so much abilities, who weren't necessarily high achievers, who didn't have the biggest, highest accolades or different things in spiritual life. But because somehow or other, they managed to grasp the attitude of growth, they were able to experience amazing things in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Prabhupada says, advancement in Krishna consciousness is based on nothing except the attitude of the follower. So these are some thoughts I wanted to share with you. I don't know if anyone has any questions or comments. Or
you wrote nice poetry streams here. Maybe I missed something.
They're not. One thing I want to just clarify, yeah, is they're not extremes. They're both important.
Not extreme, but they can't define.
Yeah.
Precisely define. Is that so? Because balance, maybe I missed something, but let us go in the middle. Tell us practically about balance.
Balance? This one?
I mean about balance of all two. These are like point opposite of each other.
Yeah, oh, so how do we, you're saying, how do we balance these things?
Let us give us
some. So the first thing one needs to do is go down the list and see. The first thing one needs to do is go down the list and do a self-reflection as to where am I imbalanced. You can't find balance if you first don't know where you're imbalanced. Many people don't even know that their attitude is wrong. That's the first thing. How many do... Thank you, Maharaj.
What? Do you understand that?
No, please.
Okay. Balance. You have to look at a seesaw. One side is going up, the other side is going down. It's going up, it's going down. But the middle seems steady. Huh. This is what called balance. Now come back. It's not funny. Physics. When you learn physics.
Let's stick to the point. Sorry.
The idea is you don't go either this extreme or this extreme. You stay in the middle where you are very balanced in your views, your attitude, your service. That way it's not going to go up or down. Because you go to one side or the other side, it's always going to be lopsided. So this example is a physical, you know, thing which you actually can see yourself how it works. And we have to put that into practice in our lives.
Yeah. Thank you, Chan. So I just got back to this. I think the first thing is we have to know where we're imbalanced. Many of us don't even know that. We know roughly, oh, this, maybe I get a bit angry or this or that, whatever it may be. First, we need to go down and make a list. There could be many others. It would be very interesting exercise. We could all sit down one day and you could make this list up to 20, 30 of different attitudes that you have to balance. And then we could all go down the list and say, where am I imbalanced first? And then in each one of these categories, you can say, in order to, like say for example, I'm more focused on being this type of person, but I may not adjust to the essence. Then I could then think of activities or things that I could do in my life that would help me to develop this aspect of my character. If I'm someone who's always giving to others, and I notice that that is a clear imbalance in my life, then I could ask myself, what could I be doing to invest more? In other words, there are activities, there are things you can be doing to redress the balance, but you won't be able to redress the balance if you don't know where the imbalance is. How many people have, and I say this every single time because it's such an important point, how many people are giving us feedback? We are surrounded by Vaishnavas who see us day in, day out. They hold incredibly valuable information for you. You're surrounded by people who have incredible secrets that can help you advance. But number one, but let me finish. Two things. Are we asking them? Number one. And number two, have we created the character by which they will even be confident to tell us? That's the point. Because what we do is we walk around and we create a bubble around us where nobody can approach us. Then you're on a suicide path. You've got to open the bubble. You've got to take the feedback. That's the only way. So this is the problem. This is the real problem. Myself included, and I can't speak for anyone else, we should be more advanced than we are. By Prabhupada's grace, by Mahaprabhu's grace, by this process, but its advancement is dependent on the attitude. Some other questions?
We're pretty much experts to keep each other in illusion very often. You know, let's often this glorification, you know, all the time. You know, I never heard that, you know, there are many times I said, like, sit down and find out what's fault with these guys, you know. You know, I try to even to make up like a kind of, you know, seminar or whatever. But just put the names down and tell me what's wrong with me, what's wrong with him. Not just, you know. You remember when I was making this survey, how am I around? So
remember
how the situation with women, how we, you know, didn't go through. And then always glorification, and especially if somebody comes or leaves, you know, he's like that. But I'm sure there are baggage of bad things also. And nobody speaks about that, you know. Even if I feel strongly I'm bad in that, I'm wrong in that, I have to build this character. Nobody tells anything. I mean, I think maybe it's not a problem, nobody noticed. So, you know, very often is that case. We just keep in illusion each other. I don't want to deal with that. I'm not to tell you. You know, let's sit down and bash each other.
Let me share something with you. Yeah. When you read Shastra and you want to develop a relationship with Krishna, before there is rasa, there must be tattva. There must be a foundation to the relationship. There must be a basic understanding and connection between two people in order for there to be deeper exchange. Otherwise, it's just superficial. It won't be heartfelt. So we have to ask ourselves, asking for feedback is like asking for rasa in a relationship, because you're asking someone to reveal very deep emotions, things that are sensitive, things that could affect you, things that only if you have a very good connection between you, you'll be able to digest. How can you expect someone to do that with you if you have not developed a foundational relationship with them?
Somebody has to point out.
Someone has to point out, but first you have to develop a relationship with them. Otherwise, why will they point it out to you? They may not be confident to point it out to you.
See, the important point is, as Sudhapa is saying, is a very important underlying point, that if you don't have good relationship with someone, that if that person comes and points out a fault in you, immediately you will become defensive. Who are you? Why are you telling me?
There's a forum for that. Meaning.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's why Nectar instruction says you reveal your heart, other one person reveals your heart, and then you can understand each other through relationship. But if someone out of the blue comes and says, Taruna, you know, this is not very good what you are doing, what will you do? Immediately, natural propensities, eating, sleeping, mating, depending. We become very defensive. And then we put the other person in an awkward position and he feels, well, maybe I offended you. He's actually coming out of good heart to tell you that you've done something wrong.
There's the way to say it.
So,
but I'll be honest with you, Prabhu. The people who give me feedback in my life, they only started really giving me feedback after maybe 6, 7, 8 years of relationship. Real feedback. Not just feedback where we put out a form and say, okay, you could improve on this, do this, and you're 7 on that and 3 on this, and forget all that. Real feedback after years of relationship. Are you ready to invest? Feedback is very valuable. You think someone's going to give that to you? What's in their heart, just like that?
You know, when good relationship develops, you understand 8 years, you won't even notice this kind of bad things. you're kind of, you know, you like the person. If I like somebody, I'll never be offended by anyone. You know, I will.
No, they're not offended by you.
Point,
they're not offended by you.
Point out, like, why don't you even see?
No, they'll see. Because they'll develop compassion for you and love for you. And because they have compassion and love for you, naturally they'll want to see you successful. And because they want to see you successful, they'll tell you what's blocking you from success. They'll give you real feedback. And it will be feedback which may be difficult for you to take, but which will be very valuable for you. But it comes at a price. And you have to be willing to pay the price. You have to be willing to invest. We want shortcuts. I've been in Maya for so many years, and now I just want to have a few meetings with everyone, get the feedback, and then I want to change myself overnight. Sorry, it doesn't work like that. You have to work through it. You have to show you're serious. You have to consistently invest in something to show that you want it. Not just a few forums overnight, sending out some emails and organizing some meetings. Invest in a relationship and open your heart. And then it will come.
You see these different things, like, for instance, strict on rules and regulations and adjusting to the essence. We don't want to, for the example of the seesaw, to go into the middle is going to miss, you know, decrease both. And actually we want to be full in both, in an essence, or to bend for the innovation and also be able to fly our own plane fully. So can we sort of, rather than compromising on either one, because if we stop depending on innovation hours, just we're going to minimise in each sense. So you have to sort of, in my head, I'm seeing it. Instead of being two-dimensional, we have to be three-dimensional.
It's not that when you go from here to here, you go any less on this. In one sense, it's not so much like a seesaw, but it's rather like when you actually bring them together, then you rise on both of them. Is an inconceivable aspect of spiritual life. That when you actually understand the essence of the rules and regulations, then you'll actually be more strict. And when you're focused on what the essence of why you're following the rules and regulation is, you see, you'll be, and when you follow the rules and regulations strictly, it will take you to the essence. You see, so they actually work together. It seems in our conditioned state that these things are opposed. If you've learned to be self-sufficient in spiritual life, then what will happen in your relationships with others? You come from a strong place, and what does that mean?
It means you can invest in them, give love,
and you can have deeper relationships. Mm-hmm. Someone thinks, oh no, it's me, it's about my spiritual, I've got to fly my own plane. If they actually have that mentality correctly, they'll actually have deeper relationships with the devotees. And if you're actually associating with the devotees properly, then what will the devotees do? They'll give you so much empowerment, so much blessings, so much spiritual strength, that even when they're gone, you'll be able to carry on. So they actually work together. But in the conditioned mentality, when we don't marry both aspects and we just focus on one, thinking it to be the essence, then we can end up crumbling. It is important to be engaged according to your nature. Of course it is. We know we have to be in our dharma. But at the same time, if we haven't learned the service of doing the needful, being a servant, following the wishes of the Vaishnavas. What does Bhagavatam say? Svanustitasya dharmasya. You can be in your dharma, and it can be a complete waste of time. Shramma eva hi kevalam. Isn't it amazing? You can be engaged according to your nature for your whole life in Krishna consciousness, but if you don't understand the essence of meaning, the goal of it, which is to be a servant, shramma eva hi kevalam, is a useless waste of time. The goal of life is not to be in your dharma. The goal of your life is to develop prema. Dharma must lead to prema. So it means you have to bring both together. And the problem with the attitude is that we're focusing, or we're not investing in both sides. Or we're seeing that, oh, when I'm doing this side, then it's good, and this side, oh, forget that, I'm only getting involved in that.
You might have just answered that question, but when it's looking, I was thinking maybe also the perfect balance is kind of dynamic. So in one situation we need like more of this side, and in another situation we need more of this. So then how do we know what is actually needed in that very situation? How can we adjust quickly in that
attitude
moment?
Is always constant. Attitude means to know both things are equally important. But practicality means in any given situation, in terms of your practical engagement, you will focus on one or the other. But your mindset is one of always valuing both sides. But when you, in your mindset, when you don't value both sides, in your mindset, if you're only valuing this side, then in your activities, you'll only ever invest in this side, and then you'll crumble. But in your attitude, if you've learned to understand that both of these things are important, see, then you'll know how to make the balance. It will come. Yeah.
So, other questions are going on. So, what's the? How do devotees speak? Like, how do devotees speak to us? When we come to Krishna consciousness, that Krishna speaks to the devotees, and then what's the relationship with that when we're in Krishna consciousness, that if Krishna can like speak to us through our heart or through the devotees, if there's like one or the other, or
yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions Shiksha Guru Keita Jani Krishna Swarup Krishna Bhakta Antaryami A Dui Rup. That Krishna takes A Dui Rup, two rupas, two forms. Who is that? Bhakta Shrestha, the devotee manifested before you, and Antaryami, the super soul within the heart. Maharaj, do you want to check?
No. Just getting itch. It means uncontrolled senses.
So Krishna manifests himself in both ways, as the devotee and as the antaryami. But we understand that in the conditioned state, we're taking more guidance directly from the devotees. And anything we're seemingly that's coming from antaryami, we're verifying with the bhakta shrestha, with the devotees. So yeah, the devotees are speaking to you. Now another question may be that all the devotees have different opinions. So how do you know whose opinion to follow? Therefore, Rupa Goswami says that, yeah, many may have opinions, but sajatiya, snehasya, ashraya. Sajatiya means like-minded, they know you. Snehasya means they have affection for you, they love you. And ashraya means they can actually be a shelter, they can help you. In other words, many devotees may have many opinions about what Bhakta David should do in his life. But whose expectations or opinions do you put more emphasis on? The ones that know you? The ones that have that love for you and that intimacy with you? And the ones that actually have the spiritual advancement that they can help you. Therefore, even in spiritual life, everyone's opinion is not equal. Everyone's, all the Vaishnavas' opinions and guidance are valued. Yet naturally, there will be some who you place more emphasis on than others. And you hear from them. And they will help you. They will help you to find this attitude of perfection.
Thank you.
talking about, thank you for this, by the way. You were talking about the pendulum, and I think I remember Srila Prabhupada told some of the interviewers, yeah, my disciples are fanatic. You know, my disciples can be fanatic, actually, in the beginning, because they're new, or they're practicing Krishna consciousness. But he said to the interviewer, but in time they'll be okay. In time, be patient with them, they'll be okay. So I kind of understand, or at least I appreciate what he meant by that, because it's difficult to know in the beginning what we can do, what best to follow. But I like that if you have that person who sujatya snehasya ashraya, then you can be a pendulum. You can choose, okay, let me follow this, and simultaneously you can ask them, is this right for me? Is this okay for me? Or maybe you've gone too far and you're suffering because of that one decision, and you can ask that person, is this still right for me? I'm suffering. And they'll tell you, okay, you're doing too much of this. So I think Srila Prabhupada is saying, okay, don't worry, do the pendulum, because in time you'll get the guidance you need. So I was wondering, what do you think about?
Yeah, sometimes, like if you think of a pendulum, like, okay, you know, like if we have one of those things and you just hold it, then gradually it will slow down and it will come to the middle. But we should understand that Krishna consciousness is a conscious process. It's not just time that brings you to that perfect attitude. Definitely you need time. What are you going to do in that time? Are you having devotees give you feedback? Are you making a conscious attempt? Are you going back to the drawing board to try and see what activities you need to factor into your life to redress the balance? What efforts are you making? So yes, it will come with time, and it will come by making mistakes, for sure. But what are you doing on your side in that time? And we don't focus, you see, because attitude is something so intangible, we feel either it's going to happen or it's not going to happen, because it's an intangible thing. With tangible things, we'll put a lot of effort into it because we can touch it, feel it, create it, and see it. But with intangible things, we don't, because we think either it happens or it doesn't. Intangible and tangible is created both by your conscious effort. Does it make sense? So yeah, so it's...
What if a devotee has this, like, kind of a default nature to automatically kind of a straight away just tip to one scale, even if he's, let's say, internally, because many of us, we come in, speaking from my perspective, from different backgrounds, and we have certain default reactions. And even we have this sense of awareness, for instance, but still that nature comes. And we, even afterwards, 10 seconds afterwards, just like in the life of Parikshit Maharshi, garlanded the Rishi, and straight away clicked, oh, it was my fault. So how can we can be simultaneously aware of the problem, but still make the wrong decision?
Yeah. Therefore, Arjuna is also saying that, you know, by what force is one empowered to act, even when, you know, against his own will. So yeah, we have conditioning, we have a default kind of conditioned nature. And this is the point I'm continuously making, that what is Krishna consciousness if we can't change our character? What is Krishna consciousness if we can't change our conditionings? What is Krishna consciousness if we can't move into a more positive devotional attitude that reflects pure spiritual aspirations? That's what this process is supposed to do. Or is it just a religious process that we're supposed to practice throughout our life, never actually change, and hope at the end of life that magically we're going to get prema? This process is real. It's meant to change us. How did Mugrari change? How did all these people change? Why are we reading all these stories, you know, of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, who was a Mayavadi, who later on changed so much that in the Bhagavatam he couldn't even stand to say Mukti Pade. That he changed the verse to Bhakti Pade. Mahaprabhu said, why you changed the verses of Bhagavatam? He said, I couldn't stand to say Mukti. Have you ever met a Mayavadi who cannot stand to say Mukti? Now we may say it's Mahaprabhu, it's Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, it's the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But if it doesn't relate to your life, then why the hell are you reading it? Then throw it away and don't read it. Why reading it then? Why studying it? What's the point? Then you don't believe it's real. You have to believe it's real. You have to believe you can change. Not because we're great. Because Mahaprabhu is Mahavadanyaya. Because Bhagavatam is a sadhu, sadhuta dayin. It makes the unsaintly into saintly. It turns crows into swans. Otherwise, why are we here? Just kind of religiously practice and then just be our own miserable conditioned selves for the whole of our lives. And then go out there and tell everyone, chant and be happy. We have to be a living theology. We have to embody what is in the books. That's the best preaching. Prabhupada said to Hari Saripuru, preaching is easy business. Just show people how happy you are. That's the real preaching. So yeah, we have a conditioned nature, no doubt. All of us coming from so many muddled up backgrounds. This process is far more powerful than any of our conditionings. That's the grace of Mahaprabhu.
I should say again. Conditioned nature is extremely difficult to change in these lifetimes. You mentioned Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, okay, he's Brihaspati. You know, it takes lifetimes. It's my experience. You know, for example, I know I'm Krishna Kshetra for the last 25 years. I don't see change in him. He's just a super nice guy from very day one. Now I've lost such an anonymous one. But in the same time, I know guys who are passionate, very full of fire for the last 40 years. They're the same. Only what is. It's my experience. Somebody doesn't need to accept. You can set up the boundaries from extremes. Within that realm, you can try to practice. But as you get old, this will wear off. Your passion wear off. You may say process works in that sense. Set up the boundaries, you know. But change change character. It's extremely difficult in these lifetimes.
But to be humble is not stereotyped. To be humble is not to have an exterior like Sachinandan Maharaj. To be humble means to have a heart like Sachinandan Maharaj. And how that humility is expressed in different devotees' lives will be different. Was Tamal Krishna Maharaj not humble? Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, humility for you means act boldly for Krishna. And that was the perfect definition of humility for Tamal Krishna Maharaj to follow. He engaged his nature, but he purified his nature.
I know extremes of stories from both.
Yeah, so anyway, that's a different thing. But the point is that these qualities are not stereotyped. We're not asking you to become externally like anyone else. You can be a loud person or you can be a quiet person, and both of those people can be humble. You can be charismatic or you can be very subdued, and both can be embodying the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. I mean, the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is depicting this. I mean, Mahaprabhu goes to Shantipur and hears Advaita Acharya speaking Mayavad philosophy, jumps onto the Vyasa and pulls him up. You know, what is higher, jnana or bhakti? Tell me once and for all. And Advaita Acharya wants to get chastised, so he says, jnana. The Mahaprabhu pulls him off the Vyasa-san, throws him down, starts beating him. Now this scene from Chaitanya Bhagavata is amazing. Mahaprabhu is furious. Advaita Acharya is getting beaten up. He's in ecstasy. Sita Thakurani, his wife, she's crying because she thinks he's going to die. Nityananda is dancing. And Haridas Thakur is behind, chanting his verse. This one scene. In this one scene of Chaitanya Bhagavat, you see the variety of personalities and the variety of how Krishna consciousness can be expressed through a variety of personality, because the very essence of spiritual life is individuality. So we're not asking you to turn around and overnight become a humble, meek person who's bowing down to every other person. But in your heart, you must understand, I'm nothing.
Prabhupada says, you know, that you have to have a change of heart. You know, and then he gives an example of a caterpillar. From an egg, it becomes a caterpillar, and from caterpillar is eating. Finally, it becomes a cocoon, and then inside the cocoon is developing a beautiful butterfly. So this is a transition. Prabhupada is using this metaphor that when we come here, we are like that caterpillar. And in the beginning, we eat, not physically eating prasadam, but assimilating the knowledge by studying the books, associating with devotees, learning the art of Krishna consciousness. Then slowly, slowly, this will give you the change of heart. And then finally, when this full change of heart, metamorphosis taken place, and you become a beautiful butterfly, then you are flying to the spiritual world. So Prabhupada says, change. But what Sruta Bhai Singh also makes point, that we cannot change our character. Character is who you are. That's what makes who you are. That's why we are individual persons. We are not a conveyor belt. Ditto. Everything same, identical. No, we are all individuals. We have our own individual personalities. We have our character. But how to best use your own situation in dovetailing, Prabhupada uses this word all the time, dovetail towards Krishna consciousness. That will make you a better person. And then when you become a better person, you actually then understand other people. And that is when you understand other people, then there is relationship, and then there is an attitude of serving. Otherwise, as Sutapa says, even what Tharuna just said, you may be here for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, only thing which has changed is, you know, grey hair here and back pain and walking with a stick. But internal change is zero. So that's where the change comes, when the Prabhupada used this word, change of heart. The heart has to change.
Can I take someone else and ask?
Yeah.
Bisha.
For a new devotee, what should the attitude be, and how does this attitude change as you? What should the attitude be as you? The more time you in Krishna consciousness.
I mean, there could be many ways to answer that, but see, for me, the attitude of a new devotee and an old devotee, the perfect attitude is the perfect attitude. And if as a new devotee you start from the right attitude, then you'll live with that attitude. So if you're asking what should be the attitude of a new devotee, I'll say the same thing to you, that look at this board and go down and try to make sure you invest in both sides. And try to value and deeply embed that both sides of this table are important for my spiritual life, just as important as the other one. And if you start with that attitude, then you make a lot of advancement. And that's why actually in Krishna consciousness, you know, attitude, as Prabhupada says, that's the first thing we should teach. Activities with attitude. With the right attitude.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so just to clarify, so saying when we sort of ask for feedback, we should ask someone who knows us, loves us, and helps us. And at the same time...
I'll just say something before you carry on that. You're not magically going to find someone, come across someone like that. Loves me. Romani knows me, he can help. Nice. No, he might. But the point is that you have to form relationships where you feel that there's scope for such things to be developed. And those are progressive relationships. You have to connect with people who are striving to become a better ashraya for you because they're progressive in their spiritual life. They can help me because they're actually trying to surrender to Krishna. I want to connect with someone who I feel there's a natural connection with, that I can share my heart with, that, you know, you meet people like that and you have a natural affinity for them, right? And people might find it. You can share open, they understand you, you can share. So you have to, it's progressive, it takes time.
And then at the same time, if someone we don't have that relationship or connection with, they come and they say some feedback, we should also be open minded and listen to them, right? It's kind of
like
a balance.
Take the essence from everything. Is it?
Yeah.
Prabhupada was in that, you know, doing a deity installation, and then you got very angry, you know, because nothing was organized, TV reporters were there, Prabhupada was getting angry, and then one hippie just came and goes, "Hey, chill out, Swami, do you want to shine Hare Krishna?" He's a fan of Acharya, you know. Even Japa, you know how Saraswati Maharaj wrote that Japa book? You know, Japa Reform Notebook. On Japa. You know how he wrote it? Because one day he was chanting Japa and a new devotee was in the temple room of Bhakta. He didn't know he was a Swami, isn't it? Sometimes new people come and they're like, "Oh, yeah." So Maharaj and I, Prabhu. Maharaj, they don't know. So Maharaj must have been nodding off. So this new person came, he's like, "No, no, you shouldn't sleep while you're chanting." And then he thought, "Oh my God, I got to change my japa." And that's how he wrote the book. Who is that person? We say, "Oh, they were always like that. They were always pure devotees." Which one of us are going to do that? Which one of us are going to be in the temple room, we're falling asleep, someone wakes us up, and we think, "You know what, my japa sucks. I need to start meditating on it, write a book about it." No, it's not that he wrote, but, you know, start reflecting about it. Who does that? The person that does that is the person that has the right attitude. And the person that has the right attitude becomes what a Vaishnava can be. I was walking past the church once and it said, "Every saint has a past and every sinner has a future." I was like, "Fuck a Christian."
Let's hope that.
Every saint has a past. We think, "Oh, they were always a saint." That kind of attitude. When someone wakes up, we tell them, "Bro, I wasn't sleeping.
I was meditating." Deeply rasa dance.
Of course I would know I wasn't sleeping because I was awake when actually I was sleeping.
You see,
who has that kind of attitude?
You have to recognize yourself, you know. And since you're talking about Saraswati Maharaj, Saraswati Maharaj, you know, he had this problem with migraine. So one time he had this flight, and he had such a migraine, and he was so uncomfortable. As soon as the plane landed, he grabbed his stuff and started pushing around to get off the plane. And there's two old ladies there, and he just pushed them outside and walked. And these two ladies said, "Is that what your spiritual master taught you?" And that hit him so hard. And this is what the story he told us when we were doing Bhakti Shastri in Vrindavan, and he was teaching us the life and precept of Srila Prabhupada. He told his story. And he said, that hit him like an arrow in his heart.
So just because of my inconvenience, I forgot the etiquette and I pushed the ladies around just for my own comfort. And he said, that taught me that because of my behavior, the ladies, you don't think I am a bad guy, but my guru is a bad guy. And he said he felt so much pain in his heart that because of his action and his intolerance to his pain, he gave Prabhupada the name that, is this what your guru is teaching you? You know, they're saying, like teacher, like student. So students come out just like the teacher. And the teacher has bad attitude, and students also come out bad attitude. So the point, Sasaru Maharaj, you know, such a great personality, he himself putting himself in that position, saying, look, we should be careful of what we do and do not do anything that will bring disrepute to Prabhupada and his movement. And of course Prabhupada says, you know, this ISKCON is my body. So if we do anything which will give a bad impression to the outside public, say, oh, Hare Krishna, ISKCON is like that. Not you are like that, not I am like that. ISKCON is like that. And ISKCON means Prabhupada, because he's the teacher. So, you know, this attitude is very, very important. And obviously, you know, as I said, we are all individuals. We cannot change ourselves, but to learn and understand and accept that we are not perfect, but we are on the path of perfection by the very process given to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you think, if you follow that, then we'll become perfect in a very short time. Otherwise you'll be here for a long time and you'll still be the same character. And years later someone meets you and says, well, you haven't changed. But if people see you and say, well, man, you've changed. When I last met you, you know, you were an angry young man and now you are such a happy, peaceful, very, very content person. That is a good reflection from someone else seeing you. Not you seeing yourself, but someone else seeing you. So, we sometimes take it for granted that, you know, I'm perfect. Everybody else is imperfect. But when they see imperfection in us, then we should realize that, yes, actually I'm the one who's imperfect. Or if they see perfection in us, then we should, okay, this is the grace of the Lord and His devotees that I am making progress in spiritual life. Otherwise, what are we doing here? Why we came here? In this very room next door, I told Shruti, when we joined this movement, what was our purpose? To get name, fame, position, money? Our whole concept was, we want to become pure devotee like Prabhupada. And that is why we joined. But while we are following this path, we got kind of lost into our own grand eyes. And yes, I want a position, I want worship, you know, I want respect. And then you get lost in this jungle of Batista, spiritual life finished. So we have to focus properly. And this is why all these books are written by Prabhupada for what purpose? Not decorating this on the shelf. Only just recently, last point. Yeah. Prabhupada said in one of his letter to one of his disciples, saying, diligently read my books every day. 1 hour minimum to 2 hours. Every day. Prabhupada said that. And then this is just one letter to one person, but then there are many other references where Prabhupada says that. I am not writing these books just for distribution. Read. Why reading? Because when you read these books, one, you will get the insight to the knowledge, which is, you know, these are revealing scriptures. Two, your hearts will become freer of this contamination. And when this heart is free from contamination, you have a deeper understanding, then that deeper understanding will be projected from you to other person. And then you can change the other person's heart. Otherwise, we may arrange huge programs, 5,000 people there, and I'm standing there and giving them this lecture, and after lecture finish, everybody can come. And then lecture finish, clapping finish, they go home and they are still the same people. They haven't changed. So, from my point of view, we are not entertainers.
You're not waiting for people to clap and say, you give a wonderful class. No. We want to see if someone changes their heart. If the heart changes, then your class is of some value. Otherwise, it's just an entertainment. Flowery words spoken very nicely on an intellectual level, but not on the platform of bhakti, of devotion, realization. So, you know, there's a very important point which we need to embrace in the ashram. We should try to develop this friendship with everyone. Because some of us may be here for a long stint, some for a short stint. It's irrelevant. But that friendship you develop will last you a lifetime. Because that is what's going to carry you on your spiritual journey. Because you have friendship in the spiritual world and you have friendship in the material world. Material world, friendship is, hey, what am I going to get out of you? In the spiritual world, what can I give? Not take, give. And if you're always giving, 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 and the other person also giving, 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 then what happens? You don't have to take. You're not getting. But in the material world, if you give me something, you're my best friend. The day you stop giving me what I want, get out. I'll look for another friend. But we are here to unite together in the spirit of brotherhood, in spirituality. And of course, you read Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, when all the devotees are coming to see Mahaprabhu in Puri, they're so joyous to see other Vaishnavas. And they are trying to outdo each other how to welcome and serve everyone. That is the attitude. Giving. When you develop the art of giving, then you understand you are making progress in Krishna consciousness. But you develop art of taking, 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 then you are on a slippery slope. And that spirituality won't last. Because remember, we have good fortune to be awakened spiritually in this life. Now it's up to us as individuals whether we take advantage of that spiritual awakening or go back to sleep. And then for next 10 million lives, Brahma says, don't worry, I have plenty of time. Trillions of years is Brahma's life. The universe will continue going on, round and round and round. And Krishna is the most patient person. He will wait. When you're ready, you come. But we can change Krishna's attitude also. Krishna, come what may, I want you. Then Krishna will not be any more patient. He will be eager to take you. So this whole process of Krishna consciousness is togetherness. We are in the same journey, in the same boat. So sometimes, you know, we have problems because we don't like this person, that person, because they have rubbed you the wrong way. But they should put aside and see the good side in everyone and develop friendship. Friendship is what's going to make you last a long way in this journey. Otherwise, you'll look for elsewhere. And when you look for friendship elsewhere, it's not going to be the same. And of course, the other thing is that you think, oh, this ashram stinks, you know, I will go to some other ashram. Then, grass is not always greener on the other side. It's the same. It is you who have to change. You don't change others. You change. If you change, then everyone else will change. What do you think? Everybody has to change for you. It's not going to happen. Change comes from one self, not from everyone else. I cannot change any one of you. What I can change is myself. That is my ability to change myself. What I expect, I'm not fitting in this place. You all guys have to change so that I can fit into you guys. It's not going to work. But if everybody has that attitude, change, and make loving relationships, that is what ashram life is all about. Yeah. Otherwise, what happens? Ashram life is difficult, austerities are difficult, and then you leave for the comforts. But you boys, I will tell you, you have got everything made now. When we came here, it was a whole different ball game. No heating. There were 70 people living here. And all of them were all of different qualities and characters. We still had the same number of showers. In fact, we had three, not four. We have four here. It's only three showers that time. Can you imagine in the morning, Mangalati times, 70 people rushing in there for shower, and the inconvenience. And beautifully, we had the first class natural water. Cold. There's no hot water. And prasadam, we had to bring some half-rotten vegetables, bring here, chop off the bad part, take the good part, cook it, and that was our prasadam. But we did not give up. We had faith in Prabhupada and Krishna, and then of course Krishna's given us all his opulence. So Krishna is saying, look, these guys went through hard time. You guys, I will not give you a hard time. I will give you some more luxury.